just as he was about to take off, Lord Shiva took him by the hand and said, wanted to tell him something very wonderful. Here are Narada's words. Sri Parikshit said, then the sage, Narada, his mind, vibrant, not just his dina, his mind, vibrating with extreme delight, called out, glories to you, O husband of the goddess Kamala, O Hari, Lord of Vaikuntha. Glories to you, O Vaikuntha world. Glories to all who live there, and glories to you, O Padma, Lord Krishna's beloved, the presiding goddess of Vaikuntha. Then, wanting to visit Vaikuntha and personally offering respect to the goddess of fortune, Narada stood up. Seeing this, Lord Shiva took him by the hand to stop him. Lord Shiva then spoke very softly so that Uma couldn't hear. Sit down. I want to tell you, because of your exalted qualities and your eagerness to see the dearest devotees of Krishna, you've lost your memory. Don't you know that Lord of Vaikuntha is right now living in Dwarka? You don't have to go, because in the commentary, Jiva Goswami said he was looking down back into the universe. He was looking up. He was looking towards the Vaikuntha region. You don't have to go. It's not so far. Just go much closer, right in Dwarka, you'll find him. And he also gives an explanation that in our ISKCON vernacular, Narada was fired up. Or in this language, he was so much feeling ecstasy in anticipation of the next encounter with a wonderful devotee who had just been glorified. Some of the other details that normally he would be possessing within his faculties just went away. So this is some explanation of how Narada went on from one thing to the next thing. So Lord Shiva says, Queen Rukmini is the supreme goddess of fortune herself, and Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Rukmini's partial incarnations accompany Lord Vamana and other avatars of the Lord. Rukmini is the perfectly complete divine consort of the complete personality of Godhead. She always serves at Sri Krishna's lotus feet. Sit down, my dear Brahmana. I shall whisper a great secret in your ear. Please hear this with absolute confidence. Surely, you haven't forgotten the Supreme Lord's words about the dearness of his devotees. Listen, O Brahmana. This is a quote from the ninth canto, where the Lord Vishnu is speaking to Durvasa Muni about his devotees. O best of the Brahmanas, so Vishnu is speaking to Durvasa. Without saintly persons, for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Now that's Prabhupada's translation. Later on, it's restated directly. Be the goddess of fortune if I can't be with my devotees. My devotees are even more important to me. That's the confidential secret that he's telling. It's addressed in relation to Ambarish Maharaj. But Ambarish Maharaj was also in the same mood, in the Vaikuntha mood, although he was living on earth, serving the Lord, but absolutely detached. We're going to hear Prahlad's glories being described and many of the things that apply to Prahlad's glories in terms of his detachment from worldly things is the same as Ambarish, is the same as anyone who has a Vaikuntha mood. That's what Prabhupada said our temples are supposed to be. Vaikuntha. Very opulent for the Lord's service. Not for our enjoyment, but for the Lord's service. And that should be our mindset. All nice and opulent things for the Lord. And for ourselves, detachment. The Supreme Personality of Godhead derives great satisfaction from his pure devotees on earth and elsewhere. And in contrast, he is not as much attracted to his own consort in Vaikuntha or the imperishable opulences she creates for his pleasure. Nor is he as much attracted by his own beauty. I don't desire to enjoy myself or my consort or her opulences as much as I desire the association of my devotee. In that section, there's other verses essentially saying the same thing but expanding the meaning. I'm completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. He's independent. But independently, he places himself in a mood of dependence upon he puts his devotee above himself. That's the idea. And whatever his devotee wants, he's obliged. Not because there's a more powerful entity than him, but he's bound by the love of his devotee. In the commentary, there's another verse where Krishna said the same thing to Uddhava, who was spoken in relation to Uddhava, but the commentators have explained it tells the exalted quality of Uddhava, but it also describes the Lord's affection and affinity for his devotees. So Krishna says, "My dear Uddhava, neither Brahma nor Shiva," and this is Lord Shiva speaking to Narada, "neither Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, even the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self, are as dear to me as you." So, Uddhava or other such exalted devotees, the Lord is disclosing his heart. As far as I am concerned, you're more important than all of these other personalities, and even more exalted and more important to me than me. And he's consistent. In other words, it's not flattery, it's his heart. The Lord's personal divine form, Lord Shiva continues, is the source of all the demigods, including me. And this form gives great pleasure to his devotees. But the Lord considers his own body worthless compared to the value of his devotees. Who is fit to praise the Lord's devotees? Moreover, among these countless devotees, Prahlad stands out as the example of perfection. The Lord has himself described this in this way. Prahlad's good fortune is inconceivable. And a quote is given in the purport to support this statement. It's found in the 10th chapter of the 7th canto, where Lord Srinadev says, listen to this one, those who follow your example, the Srinadev is speaking to Prahlad, those who follow your example will naturally become my pure devotees. You are the best example of my devotee, and others should follow your footsteps. So there it is. Prahlad's the one you should go see. Narada's getting excited. He was ready to go to Vaikuntha, now he's going to go to Sutala to see him. When the Lord tore apart Hiranyakashipu, I, Lord Shiva, all the demigods, and the goddess Lakshmi witnessed with her own eyes the incomparable good fortune of Prahlad. Lord Vishnu several times tried to offer him boons, but Prahlad refused to ask to be liberated. Instead, he chose only pure devotion. I bow down before him. And there's a reference in the purport from Sri Harivamsa. It appears that Sanatana Goswami used that text a lot to embellish the Bhagavatam, because it's, as Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the corollary or supplement or the kila to Mahabharata. So Sri Harivamsa is that in relation to Srimad Bhagavatam. So Parashara Muni is speaking in Sri Harivamsa, and he says, O Master, in the thousands of births I must wander. Prahlad is expressing to Lord Nisringadev, and so Parashara Muni is narrating it. Prahlad said to Lord Nisringadev, O Master, in all thousands of births I must wander throughout this world. Please let me have unfailing devotion to you, the infallible Supreme Lord. So very similar to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Manva Janmani Janmanishvare Bhavatad Bhaktir Ahituki Toye. So Prahlad is in the mood of Lord Chaitanya in many ways. He didn't want something material. He didn't want liberation. He did want to give Krishna consciousness to others without limit, at great risk. So he goes on, Shiva goes on glorifying Prahlad. My dear sage, Bali Maharaj violated spiritual etiquette by disobeying the order of the spiritual master and failing to carry out the obligations created by his own words. He failed to carry out the obligation created by his own words. He said, I will give you 3 paces of land. But he was unable to give three pieces of land because two covered everything. So the third meaning, he offered his head, but that wasn't a piece of land. That was something else. He failed to carry out his own words. He's saying Bali was bad. Still, as we know, the Lord agreed to become the guard at Bali's door. Was that simply the fruit of Bali's insignificant charity? I mean, after all, he only asked for three paces of land. And he didn't even manage to give him that. Because insignificant charity, now he's the gatekeeper at Bali's door. That's not the reason. The Lord also granted protection to the wicked Bana. You narrated that story yesterday. I said it would be important. Lord Shiva is saying, was this protection that the Lord offered to Bana, was that the result of my offering the Lord some prayers? No. Narada was saying, you, Lord Shiva, you're so dear to the Lord that this bad Asura Bana, just because you pleaded on his behalf, the Lord not only excused him, but granted this benediction. He would have an eternal body with four arms and be completely fearless and be one of your eternal associates. But Bana was so bad. So Lord Shiva is saying, do you think it's because of my prayers? No. It's not at all because of my prayers. It's because of Prahlad. For the same reason it was for Bali. Why was he kind upon Bali? Because Bali was one of Prahlad's descendants. And Bana was one of Bali's sons. It's only because there's some relation to Prahlad. Because the Lord has I've already demonstrated it, the Lord has all this affection upon Prahlad. So anyone related to Prahlad receives the Lord's affection. That's the reason why. You've glorified me wrongly. It's Prahlad. In the purport, it gives some details of Bali's further disqualification. Not only he failed to follow the order of his spiritual master and made false promises, although he's in an Asura family because of his grandfather, his whole lineage, they were actually devotees, but he had abandoned, at least externally, he had abandoned. Internally, he was a great devotee, but externally, he had abandoned that practice. And he had violated the universal order. In other words, he took over the governance of the universe, kicked out Indra, kicked out all the other personalities that Indra had put in place and put his own people in place. Just turned everything upside down. So, why did these reverses happen to these bad people? Because of their relation with Prahlad, his most beloved devotee. But what more can I say about this in the presence of Gauri, the closest friend of the goddess of fortune? He's very discreet. He understands the nature of his consort, Gauri. Indirectly, he's saying that if I said this loud enough that she could hear it, she'd get really mad. And when she gets mad, look out, She might offend me or even you. And that would be very bad for her, so shh. Now here's a nice, this morning I'm going to be some more reading from the purports because it just gives you a flavor of how Gopi has rendered Sanatana Goswami's purports. Reason dictates that a newcomer to devotional service like Prahlad could not surpass the goddess Lakshmi, who eternally resides in the chest of Lord Narayan. Yet, still, Prahlad received special mercy from the Lord to put him in that unlikely position. And here's the explanation. When Brahma gave Hiranyakashipu boons that made him the scourge of the three worlds, the Supreme Lord was concerned that the awkward situation might weaken his devotees' confidence in the process of devotional service. To dispel the Vaishnava's anxiety and doubts, Lord Nrisimhadeva, right after killing Hiranyakashipu, blessed Prahlad to become greater than all other devotees, past and present, including the residents of Vaikuntha, his personal attendants, and his beloved consort Lakshmi. With this benediction in mind, Lord Shiva has said about Prahlad, quote, a greater recipient of Krishna's mercy than your father, than me, than Garuda, than the Lord's servants, even greater than the goddess of fortune, is Prahlad. Prahlad is famous throughout the three worlds as the dearmost devotee of Krishna. Thus, by the Lord's sweet will, Prahlad became the greatest Vaishnava, which would otherwise have been impossible. Sometimes the personality of Godhead declares that other, quote, recent devotees, like Prahlad, are dearer to himself than Lord Sankarshan, Mahalakshmi, and the other great personalities in the eternal kingdom of Vaikuntha. Quite a build-up, huh? Very special devotee. So he concludes, go quickly to Sutala. Offer Prahlad your countless blessings. Embrace him and tell him, I embrace him. Again and again. Unfortunately, that best of saintly persons will not tolerate our bowing down to him or speaking anything in his praise. If you want to avoid getting into trouble, do not neglect this fact. And that ends the chapter. So, the next chapter begins by saying that with the speed of the heart, Narada took off and went to Sutala. So the speed of the heart means, in Sanatana Goswami's commentary, it means as fast as the mind. So it was that fast. He was in Sutala. Now why Sutala? Where is Sutala? It's in the region below this earth planet in the configuration of the universe. And if you read very carefully the chapter with Vamana's appearance after Vamana tied up Bali, after taking everything from him, and a whole scene ensued between persons that thought that was really bad and persons that thought that was appropriate. And Prahlad was there and he said, this is perfectly fine what the Lord has done, arresting him and tying him up with ropes. Anyway, there's lots of details in that passage. So he released him. Bali's mind was unchanged. He was Lord Vamana's devotee, tied up, king, on the street, liberated, didn't matter. He was his devotee. And when that quality in him was exhibited, Vamana released him, gave him a kingdom to preside over, because he was now an Indralok. He gave him a kingdom to preside over in Sutala, which is Atala Sutala. It's below the earth planet. And he made an arrangement that his grandfather, great-grandfather, Prahlad, would reside with him in his kingdom in Sutala. So that's where Prahlad is. And then he said, I'll be your gatekeeper. I'll stand at the door and keep all bad people away just to protect you. So when Narada reached Sutala, he went running into the capital city. And when he reached Prahlad, he saw Prahlad seated in a very quiet, secluded place in meditation. And what was the perfection Prahlad perfected? One of the nine processes of devotional service. Which one of those processes was it? Oh, remembrance. So Prahlad was seated in Sutala in a quiet place in meditation. It's described in the commentary that his meditation was so profound that he knew before Narada reached there that he was coming. But at the same time, his meditation was so absorbed that he couldn't move his mind from meditation on the Supreme Lord. So as Narada was coming, Narada is his spiritual master. He knows that Narada is coming. But his mind is so deeply absorbed, it takes him a long time to recover his mind from meditation upon the Lord exclusively to greet Narada. So Narada starts to approach him. And with some effort, Prahlad induced Narada to accept a seat and then began to worship him in accordance with standard rules. But that's in conflict with Narada's mood, because Narada is thinking, you are the greatest. He just heard it from Lord Shiva, the greatest of the Lord's devotees. So Narada, feeling great reverence for Prahlad, refused the worship. He shed tears of joy and tried to embrace Prahlad. And then he spoke as follows. These flies are pretty aggressive. They just bumped into the microphone. So the purport. Because Narada was reluctant to accept the seat Prahlad offered, Prahlad had to force him to take it. Prahlad brought water to wash Narada's feet and brought argya and all the other paraphernalia for full worship. But Narada stopped him, being interested only in embracing Prahlad. Narada said, now, after so long, I have finally seen you, the true recipient of Krishna's full mercy. Now my efforts have borne fruit. From your very childhood you have been endowed with pure devotion for Krishna. Such spontaneous love has never been seen anywhere before. So there's a very wonderful description of this in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Those of you who want a little tingling of ecstasy can read that section. It describes Prahlad's childhood. Just think of some cute little boy that's nice and nice devotee. Can't compare with Prahlad. Prahlad was totally absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Lord. This remembrance wasn't just something that matured over time, gradually. From childhood he had this quality. I want to read. I want to read something that describes his external qualities. The Sanskrit word is shilana. His conduct, what he did externally. And it very, very closely resembles what we heard and discussed yesterday about Narada. How Narada had himself in his previous life four particular qualities. He was, who remembers what they are? Self-controlled, disciplined, obedient. What's the other one? He didn't speak unnecessarily. This is Prahlad also. He was not only ready to be transformed, he was transformed. He would sit silent when the other boys would come. They want to play. Prahlad just became silent like a stone. He was no fun at all for the other kids. So he just left them alone. And sometimes he would, in absorbed in remembrance of the Supreme Lord, he would just jump up and start singing and dancing. Sometimes he would scream names of the Lord and everyone thought he was mad. Then he would sit down silently again. Sometimes he felt the touch of the Lord on his shoulder and his whole body started to tremble. And his hairs would stand on end and tears would go streaming from his eyes, stunned in ecstasy. It's described when persons saw him, because he was living in an Asura kingdom, when they saw him, his quality of a Mahabhagavata, we know this from Chaitanya Charitamrita, from Lord Chaitanya's instructions, that a symptom of a Mahabhagavata is just by seeing that person, one chants the holy name of the Lord. So that was Prahlad when he was just a little boy. The hard core demon. They weren't just little boys that were a little mischievous. They were hard core demons. They would become transformed in Prahlad just seeing him, just being in his presence. Anyway, so these other his character was ideal. He was grave. He was very, very compassionate. Same as said, he was perfectly determined. His sense of purpose was one. Sometimes when he was a young boy, absorbed in meditation, he would just get up and start acting out the pastimes of the Lord. Very much like we read in Chaitanya Bhagavat about Lord Nityananda. As a little boy, he had never seen or heard the recitation of the pastimes of Ram, the pastimes of Krishna. But he and the other boys, he would get them together and get them to perform the pastimes. And he would just get absorbed in the mood of those pastimes. So Prahlad was like that. Fixed. Perfectly respectful to all living entities. He knew he had social grace. He knew how to act with everyone. It says specifically, although he had these characteristics, it just happened. In other words, internally, he was so detached from things of this world, he had not a clue of how bodily functions were taking place, how he was eating, how he was walking, how he was sleeping. He was just absorbed in an indescribable, just inconceivable way, he was absorbed in Krishna consciousness as a little boy. So Narada is glorifying his disciple Prahlad in this way. No one has seen such spontaneous love as you exhibited. And the commentary says, Narada has diligently studied all the revealed scriptures to learn about the Lord's most intimate devotees. And recently he's just visited Prayag and this king in South India and Shivaloka. But now he's declaring, in all the scriptures and anything I've experienced, there's no one as exalted as you. Great build-up. Wait till the reversal comes where Prahlad wants to deny everything. His humility melts the heart. So by virtue of pure devotion, you have overcome terrible obstacles, thousands of outrages your father has committed against you, and by your influence, all the demons have become Vaishnavas. So in the purport, there's a nice quote of from the seventh canto where the tortures of Prahlad are described. And then the comment is, here's some of the ways he tried to kill Prahlad. Throwing him beneath the feet of big elephants. Throwing him among huge, fearful snakes. Employing destructive spells. Hurling him from the top of a hill. Conjuring up illusory tricks, administering poison, starving him, exposing him to severe cold, winds, fire and water, and throwing heavy stones to crush him. Lesser Vaishnavas would not be able to endure as staunchly as Prahlad the severe kinds of distress imposed by Hiranyakashipu. In the face of such torments, anyone not as fully surrendered and absorbed in remembrance of the personality of Godhead would lose the courage and determination to continue serving the Lord. But none of these tests distracted Prahlad from his devotional service. Being solidly fixed in bhakti yoga, Prahlad was empowered to preach effectively. The sons of demons of Vishnu, enemies of Vishnu, became Vaishnavas by hearing Prahlad's instructions, and even just by touching or seeing him. Therefore, in the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, which is part of the Narada Purana, the goddess of earth, Dharini, Devi, glorified Prahlad in this way. Alas, this human world is now especially fortunate since you, the best of the Vaishnavas, are present. Everyone who touches you or sees you and the symptoms of your ecstatic emotions will become entitled to take up residence in Hariloka. Well, that's very much appreciated by all the devotees of the Lord. So a few more. While immersed in meditation on Krishna, you seem to forget your own existence. Like a madman, you danced and sang and called out loudly, your body trembling. In this way, you spread devotional service unto Lord Vishnu, delivering the worlds from the cycle of material life and filling them with joy. When Lord Krishna appeared on the shore of the ocean, and this is saying Lord Krishna, this is Narada speaking, it's Lord Krishna appeared on the shore of the ocean, explains, it's Lord Nrsingadev, who is actually Lord Krishna, appearing on the shore of the ocean means at the palace of Hiranyakashipu, which apparently was overlooking the ocean. When the Lord appeared, He placed you on his lap and caressed you like a mother. So this is in reference to something from Harivamsa, the Harivakti Sudodaya. When Prahlad approached the throne where Lord Nrisimhadeva was seated after dismembering Hiranyakashipu, the Lord not only heard his prayers, but the Lord got down off the throne, onto the ground, and like a mother, placed Prahlad in his lap and started caressing him. And with his big tongue, he was licking his body, according to Harivakti Sudodaya. How much affection does the Lord have for you? It's inconceivable. All the other demigods, I was there, Shiva was there, Brahma was there, the goddess of fortune was there. They didn't get this kind of treatment. The Lord holds you in very, very special favor. Lord Brahma was terrified, and he begged you to approach Lord Nrisimha. Yeah. And then you did, and he picked you up, placed you on his lap, and began to lick your whole body. When Lord Hari... Anyway, I'm going to skip some verses. You once went to the Naimisha forest to have darshan of Narayan, who is known as the Lord in Yellow Dress, Pitavas. Heard that before? Pitavas, the Lord in Yellow Dress. So this is from Vamana Purana. It's a reference where once Prahlad was the king, and he wanted to have darshan of Lord Narayan. So he was going on a pilgrimage to that place where Lord Narayan lives, and when he was on that pilgrimage, he saw one like an aborigine looking person, like a abhira, a forest dweller, but he was carrying a bow, the weapons of a king. So he thought, this is some rascal imitating the activity of the king. I'm going to chastise him. So he took a vow. He said, I'm going to defeat you. And when he had this battle with this personality, he was unable to defeat him. It went on for days. So Prahlad was traveling with a deity that he kept with him, and he took the deity out in the morning, and he was worshipping his deity. And so he had gathered together some forest flowers and different items to offer to his deity. And when he finished the worship of the deity, he saw this person standing there wearing the garland that he had offered to his deity. And then he realized, this is the Lord that I have come to see. And he was just testing me. So he came and fell at the feet of Lord Narayan, Pitavas. And there was a jubilant welcoming between the two, and at a certain point Prahlad expressed his concern. And what am I to do? I've taken this vow. I'm a Kshatriya. I've taken a vow that I will defeat you. But I can't defeat you. I certainly wouldn't fight you. But even if I could, I couldn't defeat you. But I'm a Kshatriya. I've taken a vow. And the Lord's response was, my pure devotee, you always defeat me. So Narada reminds Prahlad of this incident. How dear you are to the Supreme Lord. So hearing all this, Prahlad is very unhappy. Narada overlooks his unhappiness, and he just bursts out in ecstasy. You have conquered all of us by your pure devotion. And he goes on with his glorifications, which I'm going to skip because of time, but how he sees the whole incident with Bali as, again, it's the mercy that the Lord has upon you that Bali was given the benediction of having Lord Vamana as his gatekeeper, and so on. So Prahlad can't take it anymore. He just looks at the ground, and in a very quiet voice, he speaks to his spiritual master as follows. My Lord and spiritual master, please consider everything you have said. A young boy simply cannot understand correctly the science of devotional service to Krishna. Rather, when one receives instructions from great souls, those instructions have the power to awaken one's higher understanding. Only that, in other words, he's giving all the credit back to Narada. Only then can one engage in devotional service to Lord Hari. Therefore, it is not a sign of greatness that ordinary persons like me can persevere despite terrible... He agrees. What I was subjected to, it was terrible. Inhuman to endure what I went through. But it was possible only by the empowerment. He doesn't directly say by you or Narada, but he's doing it indirectly and saying it's giving spiritual enlightenment to children so that they can behave like saintly persons shows the compassion of exalted personalities. So exalted you made me that I could endure these things and shun the boon of liberation. From the commentary. In this verse, Prahlad does not even mention Narada's depicting him as being fully absorbed in meditation on Krishna, because he couldn't deny it, because it was true. So this is for those of you that want to learn the art of grace. When some praise comes, in this particular case, Prahlad did not deny that which is obviously true, but he was deflecting in some other way the praises and the glories enunciated by Narada. Merely from these symptoms, the best of saints do not conclude that Krishna has given a person his mercy. Krishna's mercy, O blessed Narada, appears only in a true, worthy servant, like Hanuman. He's saying, merely fixing the mind upon the Lord as the worshipable object, that's incomplete. The stage of completion is when you carry that great regard and respect for the worshipable person into some expression, practical expression of love and devotion. And then he says, I have never performed any real service for the Lord like Hanuman and others. I have only remembered the Lord sometimes when my mind was troubled. As I already mentioned, he most certainly did lots of service. Even as a child, he was bringing the other students and some of the other residents of that horrible demoniac place to Krishna consciousness. He became a ruler, and he brought his whole kingdom to like Vaikuntha. But he's holding another as the true servant You regard those affectionate displays. Oh, go back. You praise me because he caressed me and showed other signs of affection. But some consider such affectionate behavior as merely a false show of Maya, and others just a display of his pastimes. In other words, this is his nature, it's not me. The glory goes to him. You regard these affectionate displays as natural symptoms of his love, but I consider them no more real than a dream. And even if we accept them as real, still, this is not evidence of his mercy. The Lord truly gives his mercy, saintly authorities believe, when he grants the right to render varieties of service. A blessing he gives to such devotees as Hanuman. Nothing else really counts as his mercy. Furthermore, Lord Nrisimhadev performed his pastimes not to favor me, but to protect the demigods, his devotees, and to deliver two of his eternal servants. This is his humility. All those other personalities say it's Prahlad, and he's saying it's all the other personalities. Of the words of Brahma and of others, such as Brahma's sons, and fully display the greatness of devotional service. These were the only reasons for his pastimes. In other words, in the purport, very, very intricate. When the book is published, you can enjoy reading this intricate discussion. Narada said certain things, Brahma said certain things, Brahma's son said certain things. Even Hiranyakashipu said certain things. So the Lord was fulfilling their words, because he's the upholder of the words of his devotees. That's the Lord. I just happened to be there. I was an innocent bystander. The glory goes to these other personalities. That's part of the art of receiving some respect and honor. Not just, you can say, the grace of doing is in a transparent way. Not in a pretentious way or intellectually tricky way. Just, it bounces off one who is humble, but it goes to someone else whose greatness is being appreciated by that humble devotee. O greatest of devotees who have nothing material to possess, when the personality of Godhead gave me a kingdom, I then understood that I had not received even one atom of his mercy. Humility. Actually, the situation was that Prahlad, he was refusing liberation, refusing a kingdom, he just wanted pure devotional service. Finally, he relented by considering, the Lord will be pleased. He wants me to do this. So if I do this, he'll be pleased. All right, I'll do it. I don't want it, but he wants it, so I'll do it. And in doing it, there's a chance, by the mercy of the Lord, that some of the demoniac people that I have to preside over will become devotees. I can do a little sankirtan, a little harinam, and maybe some book distribution. Well, with the prabhus, and we'll have kirtan, some home programs. So, okay. But now he's saying that his words of glorification to Narada, you who possess nothing, but look at me. You're glorious, but look at me, I have all this stuff all around. I'm a king and burdened by all these things. That's not the Lord's mercy. If he was merciful, he'd let me just be like you. I'm tied down to all this stuff. Sometimes our householders feel that way, right? Oh, this headache, all this stuff. When will the Lord be merciful? So, because of our time limitation, I'm just going to do a quick gloss. So what he wants to do is turn Narada's attention to Hanuman, because he says, another thing he says that I don't even know where the Lord is. I try to meditate upon him within my heart, but I'm so fallen, he doesn't even appear in my heart, and where else he is, I don't know. But Hanuman, for thousands of years, he's been serving the Lord personally. Go see Hanuman. He is the recipient of the Lord's mercy. He's always in the mood of serving the Lord. Go find him and you'll find the real recipient of the Lord's mercy. And there's this whole ecstatic glorification of Hanuman, and he gets to where Hanuman is, and he repeats the glorification, and Hanuman denies the whole thing. Here I am in Kim Purusha Loka, and where's Ramchandra? He went back to the spiritual world and took everybody but me. And besides, I have all this formality in my service. But those who have informality in their service, very, very confidential relationship with the Lord is the Pandavas. Makes this big build-up of glorification of the Pandavas. So why don't you go see the Pandavas? They're the recipients of the Lord's mercy. And then, I won't destroy the story or keep you in suspense. If you want to read the book when the BBT publishes it. When he comes to the Pandavas, I'll do it quickly. He comes to the Pandavas, and they're having this meeting, a Pandava meeting. Mr. Ghosty. Management board meeting. How can we get Krishna to come? Where is he? He's not been here in a long time. We're missing him so much. What trouble can we get ourselves into so he'll come and help us out? And Narada comes, and one by one, each of the personalities are exhibited. Sahadeva and Nakula speak, and Bhima has this really heavy attitude toward Krishna. But it's in confidence. It's like between two best friends, how one might speak of another. So you can't trust this Krishna anyways, even if he was here. And this is all these heavy things. And Yudhisthira and Arjuna and Draupadi and they all express their feelings in their mood of separation and how they're not really the recipients of Krishna's mercy. But the Yadavas in Dwaraka, he left us and he went there. And they're seeing him all the time. Not just when they have the trouble or something, but he's with them all the time. So go there. So he off to Dwaraka, and he gets to Dwaraka, and he sees the members of the Yadu dynasty in the Sudharma assembly, and Krishna hasn't arrived yet. It's already the afternoon. And they don't know what's going on. So they greet him, and they try to honor Narada. And he just wants to honor them. And in that assembly, they have no idea. There must be something wrong with Krishna in the palace. Maybe because you're Narada, you can go there, we can't. And so Ugrasena says, and when you go there, just one request. Can you please ask Krishna to hurry up? We're out here waiting for him. So Narada goes into the inner chamber, and everyone's in this devastated mood because Krishna is very, very, they don't know what's wrong. Krishna hasn't even gotten out of bed. And this is unlike him. We know that Krishna always rises very early. He set an ideal example for all the members of Dwaraka. But he's in bed with a sheet pulled over his head. moaning. And this whole, anyway. Krishna's feelings, I'll just do it. The detail is so ecstatic. But Krishna is feeling separation from the residents of Vrindavan. And Rukmini discloses it. Nobody really knew until she said. So Rukmini says, here's my suspicion, what's happening. Sometimes at night when Krishna is asleep, he's dreaming. And in his dreams, he's calling out the names of the cows and the cowherd boys. And sometimes he's in his sleep, he's in his threefold bending form as if he's holding his flute. In Dwaraka, Krishna doesn't have a flute in Dwaraka. Doesn't have the threefold bending form. But in his dreams, that's where he is, in Vrindavan. Sometimes he reaches over and pulls on my sari and calls out the name of Chandravali. And sometimes he just starts crying. And the pillow is soaked with tears. So I think something like that must have happened last night. He had some thought of the residents of Vrindavan. He's not able to overcome his feelings. And Satyabhama speaks next. You nonsense, Rukmini. It's not just in his sleep. It's all day long. He hardly even knows where he is. He hardly even recognizes his wives or any of his associates or attendants. You know this. And then Balaram speaks. He said, it's not just the residents in Vrindavan. It's the trees, it's the birds, it's all the forms of life. Krishna's can't bear separation from them. So when Uddhava is called, anyway, it's very intricate. Uddhava is called forward to say what he thinks of the situation and basically says, don't ask me about this, because it'll be devastating if you do. But everyone can't resist talking about it because it's Krishna and his relationship with the residents of Vrindavan. And so as they continue talking, Krishna hears their talking and he comes stumbling out looking like he got beat up or something, with tears streaming from his eyes. And anyway, there's many, many intricate details of dialogue. One point he asks Balaram, you've recently been there to Vrindavan. Can you give us a report? What's happening in Vrindavan right now? And Balaram is really heavy. Balaram says, they're about to die. And there's only one thing that can save them. You have to go personally to Vrindavan. You promised them you would go to Vrindavan, and you lied. Balaram's heavy. And Krishna turns to Uddhava, said, you've always been the best of my counselors. Can you please instruct me what I should do? Uddhava gives the same advice. You have to go. And in hearing Uddhava's words, he starts downpours of crying, and he turns to Balaram and latches onto Balaram's shoulder, and Balaram starts crying like Krishna, and they both fall to the ground and lose consciousness. And then Uddhava gets a brilliant idea. The brilliant idea is he arranges for a facsimile, another Vrindavan, to be created in Dwaraka that looks just like Vrindavan. He thinks he can revive Krishna that way. Take him to this Nava Vrindavan. So he thinks that he's in Vrindavan, but it's not. Because he just worried he's delirious. just wants to revive him. So he gets Rohini because she's also been in Vrindavan, and Balaram and Krishna because they've also been in Vrindavan. In the back of Garuda, they go off to another Vrindavan. Vishwakarma built it like that. Pretty interesting, huh? Well, everything is real. It's kind of like animatronics that are alive or something, except for the people. Mother Jasoda, Nanda Maharaj, and maybe some other personalities, some gopis. But when Krishna, so as Garuda is flying, Balaram comes to external consciousness, and he kind of figures out a little bit what's going on. So he going along with the whole plan of Uddhava to get Krishna back into, you know, being alive, being conscious. And so he revives Krishna when they reach there, and this whole scene ensues with Krishna going to each of the different persons and having conversations with them, and they're stunned because they're statues, so they don't respond to him. But the cows are move around, and so he goes, Balaram gets him into the mood, let's go with the cows, it's time to go, we gotta... No, Mother Jasoda is not speaking to you because she wants us to go and take care of the cows. Let's go. So the cowherd boys take off with Krishna, and some scene with meeting with the gopis before they go, and some exchanges, and Krishna looks around and embraces the gopis like no one's looking and tells them, we'll see you later. There's many details, so I'm leaving, but it's so amazing. And then they get to the river Jamuna, which is the sea, and Krishna's in ecstasy seeing the river Jamuna, but somehow he sees in the middle of the river is this giant fortress. What's that out there? It's Dwarka. So it's a little bit like, you know, Lord Nityananda telling Lord Chaitanya, we're in Vrindavan. Similar mood. And then, so Lord Chaitanya is in ecstasy, we're in Vrindavan. But then he realizes when he sees Advaitacharya in a boat, what are you doing, Advaitacharya? What are you doing in Vrindavan? Lord Nityananda, you've tricked me. So Balaram's doing it again. That's Dwarka. And so we're not in Vrindavan, but he's revived now. At least he can function. Before he couldn't even function. And then we'll fast forward a little bit, and so it goes back to where Parikshit Maharaj is there speaking to his mother Uttara. And the conclusion is, the residents of Vrindavan are the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy. And amongst the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis are the most exalted. And amongst the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most exalted. And that is the close of part one. So all of this detailed description of who is the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy is to build up to a grand crescendo, the glorification of the residents of Vrindavan as the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy. So the Lord's mercy comes into the lives of each of the Lord's devotees. The commentary makes this clear in intervals along the way. Every devotee is the recipient of Krishna's mercy. Due to the moods of humility, the devotee is not feeling that I have this great qualification and thus I'm a recipient of the Lord's mercy. Because he's, like Prahlad is doing, because he's so merciful, he shows his mercy, but it's not because of any qualification that I have. It's circumstantial. I'm in good company and that good company invites the Lord's mercy. Hare Krishna. So any comments or discussion on this first part? Another time we'll have to go into more of the details. Yeah, Gaurashakti, Gaurashakti.
Master, I don't know if you can tell us from an idea of how these things happen. This story happened before Bhagavan was knighted by Shukadeva Goswami.
Shukadeva Goswami had finished speaking, and that was over. Utra was in the audience. Utra asked, could you describe the essence of what you just heard? And Maharaj Pariksit responds, the essence of what I've just heard, I can tell you in the form of a story. And here's the narration. That's the chronology.
The question is, since this story happened before the narration, was it part of the narration? The story was part of the narration of Shukadeva Goswami revealed to
It's a history. He's narrating the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam in the form of another history. The essence in the form of another history. Particularly the search of Narada for the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. Now there's not more detail than that. It's presenting it in some cases like it's a recent history, because Krishna and Vrindavan, those pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan have closed when Maharaj Pariksit is king. Krishna has departed from the world. His pastimes, his Bhoma Lila, have finished. Right? So it could have been a recent history, or it could have been another day of Brahma. Doesn't say. It's another history. The essence of Srimad Bhagavatam narrated in the form of that history. Yeah.
In the narration of Bhagavatam, it is said that right from the first canto to the 12th canto is a gradual deviation of consciousness being from canto 1 to canto 12.
From canto 1 to canto 10. Specifically.
And so, in this narration, the commentary of Bhagavatam, is this something similar to take one of that?
Yeah, I said that in the beginning, that like a musical composition has a refrain, and then there's digressions and there's terms for all these things, but into another mood, and it comes back to the refrain. And it's building a grand composition. But it's not linear. There's a progression, but it's not a linear progression. Yes. Bhagavati.
Back in the first part of the talk, I was reminded there was a best-selling book some years back, Why Bad Things. Why Bad Things Happen to Good People?
Yeah.
I think we should write another book, Why Good Things Happen to Bad People. Which is glorifying Krishna's persona.
Well, the book is already written. Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita, or Why Good Things Happen to Bad People. What does it actually mean? You want to offer it? Oh, does it mean what?
Because even Lakshmi is a devotee of the Lord.
Well, it's said why he says that. He, that's Lord Narayan or Lord Vishnu, invested that special position in Prahlad. Because on the one hand, Prahlad's the quality of Prahlad's devotion. And another factor, as was indicated, was a particular need of the time, the necessity is the mother of invention. So, because of Hiranyakashipu's terrorism, because the Lord demolishing Hiranyakashipu, that could have been done. But specifically, to reinstill faith in persons in the process of devotional service and the strength of devotional service, this investing of special mercy within Prahlad was arranged. And, you know, transcendentalists might want to add that that was just a leela of the Lord, or a ploy of the Lord, because it was really just his affection upon Prahlad. And, you know, within a family, can a husband, wife, can the husband have very, 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 very special affection upon their son? Seemingly even more so than affection upon the wife. If that can exist, why not this can exist? It's the Lord's affection, and he can distribute his affection at his will. He knows how to pick the suitable candidates. Yes, Damayanti.
Thinking about Rupa Goswami and their song to his scene at his commentary in the novels like that. There's like they know that they're residents of Vrindavan,
yes,
in the spiritual world. So if they were asked, if they were recipients of the Lord's mercy, they're humble, but at the same time, they're in the qualification of being blessed for God, which is the most
You're commenting.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering how
I'm wondering what you're wondering.
How would they be able to respond if asked, are you recipient of the Lord's mercy? Because they're actually residents of Vrindavan. And with the humility and stuff.
Because they're humble servants. In other words, it's like the comment that Sanatana Goswami made himself, that he didn't write the book, he just held the pen. And the Lord wrote the book. Madan Mohan wrote the book. And he was the instrument. So such, we can speak those words, but to be in the consciousness of Sanatana Goswami, we can't imagine it. But each act he did was as an instrument of expressing service to the Lord as the Lord wanted him to render that service in very, 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 very delicate, intimate, confidential ways. I mean, one of the wonderments for me, this isn't directly answering your question, but it does answer the question. The subtleties. We sometimes have to say things multiple times in multiple ways to make a point very clear. Sanatana Goswami just touches it. very delicately. And all this detail is just manifested. He's empowered. So, as a resident of Vrindavan, he knows what it is to be a recipient of the Lord's mercy, but he, as a service to write transcendental literature, which is something that Lord Chaitanya asked him to do, he did it in a transcendental way. It's like a whole ocean of nectar, and allowing the reader just to go swimming and an ocean of nectar, transcendental nectar, coming from pen of one of the eternal residents of Vrindavan, eternal associates of Krishna, appearing to assist Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes of propagating love for Krishna. He's happy to do that. He can explain it so artfully, like no one else can. Certainly not like someone who is a speculative scholar can. No way. It's a little bit like sometimes Prabhupada would request devotees, his disciples, to read Krishna book to him. And he would sit there and for long periods of time just listen to Krishna book. And then he would say, "This is wonderful literature. Krishna has written it." So he could be subjective and objective. He was the instrument, but then appreciating Krishna has written it and relishing listening to it.
I was just wondering how, knowing that they're eternal residents of Vrindavan, they still consider themselves so fallen.
That's their natural humility. It's expressed so in each of their cases. Raghunath Das certainly, but all of them, and Haridas Thakur, but all of them, absolutely humble. When Rupa Goswami was asked to recite his Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava for the audition of Lord Chaitanya and his associates, he wouldn't speak. He wouldn't sit with them, he sat at a distance. He considered himself unworthy just to be in their company. But when he spoke, the recitation of what he wrote, or what he had written, was like pearls. What was the expression? Some poetic expression. It's like mines of jewels. This isn't poetry. This is something else. He was empowered. Sanatana Goswami also, he was empowered. And fathom this one, that everything he's writing, he's realized it. We're hearing a story. He had realized it all. From another world. So someone who's from another world can write such literature.
This question is from last night's class. You were describing how Shambhu is the glance of Mahavishnu carried by Sudarshan Chakra, causing the creation. And in this glance contacts Bhagavan, there is Lord Shiva and his consort.
Yeah.
Is this a different than the creation of Lord Shiva by Lord Brahma and his sword of his anger?
Yes, yeah, different.
Yeah,
different. That description that the first part is Brahma Samhita. You're familiar with Brahma Samhita. Besides, you know it's on your bookshelf, but that description is right from Brahma Samhita. Shambhu, all the terminology, it's right there, Brahma Samhita. So Shambhu is the glance. And so anyways, you got it, you recited it correctly. When the glance contacts Pradhan, it's like milk on the stove, and you put in a little curdling agent, and it's milk transformed. Milk in contact, milk transformed. Shambhu, and so it's a different sequence than this other. That was your question, right?
Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva, when we hear in general, when we hear descriptions of Lord Shiva, it's that Lord Shiva after the contact with Pradhan. So Lord Shiva with his consort Parvati or Uma or Ambika or known by different names. That Lord Shiva in Kailash. Although when we read the Shiva in Shivaloka, there's the spiritual counterpart also. There's Uma or Ambika in Shivaloka. But in the complete form, not in this Pradhan transformed into Mahamaya form. It's complex. Very complex. Giri Govardhan?
Maybe you explained this in the beginning and I didn't follow it. You said that Srimad Bhagavatam is a kila to Mahabharata.
Yes.
But it's also the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
What is the, I don't follow the relationship to Mahabharata. In what way is it dependent to Mahabharata?
Okay. You missed the first class. Something. Okay. So, after the Mangalacharana, where Sanatana Goswami is praising the Lord and his devotees and offering benedictions to the reader and explaining the purpose of the book, I read the verse explaining the purpose of the book, he begins the narration of the book. The book narration begins with Jaimini Rishi speaking to Janamajaya. Jaimini Rishi is a disciple of Vyasa who has just finished narrating Mahabharata to Janamajaya. And Janamajaya likes that version of Mahabharata so much because it's much more than the other versions he's heard, bona fide versions that he's heard, Vyasa's version included, that he wants to hear more, kila, about that Mahabharata which he's just heard from Jaimini Rishi. So Jaimini Rishi says, very well, I will tell you more. Here it is, the kila to Mahabharata that you just heard. And it begins like this. Maharaj Parikshit was seated, having just heard from Shukadeva Goswami, and there was still a little time left. Okay. Yes.
I have a question about the statement in Bhagavatam that says that all the Vaishnava devotional is inheritance. My question is that superlative given taken into consideration just the residence of the material universe, or that that includes the residence of different class or the residence of Vrindavan, including Radharani? And the Vaishnava term, can it be applied to the Gopis and Radharani also, or it is only to persons that become Krishna consciousness in the material universe?
Shall I repeat the question? His question was, when the statement which I read a couple of times where the Lord says, amongst my devotees, Prahlad is the greatest devotee, does this mean that one, right?
No.
Not that one.
Oh,
Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee, and here he's saying that Prahlad is the greatest devotee, and what about the other residents of Vaikuntha, residents of Vrindavan and the gopis, and will the real greatest devotee of Krishna please stand up? Not that? That's not your question.
I just wanted to understand how this Vaishnava of all the Vaishnavas, which Vaishnava is Bhagavan loving the world? Which Vaishnava is in that category of which Shiva is the highest? Is that just the Vaishnava of this Vaishnava?
Okay, his question is, that statement, Vaishnavanam Yata Shango, does that, which group amongst the Vaishnavas does that refer to? I don't know the context of the statement. It's a glorification. We could say, you know, pick anybody in the room here. Kalki Prabhu, you're the greatest devotee. Now, greatest amongst whom? Maybe his wife and son. Maybe someone would say, no, Kanta's the greatest devotee amongst them. But anyway, it's a glorification. It's not so much a final, authoritative, absolute, amongst this group he's the greatest, but then if you extend the group into then he's not the greatest anymore. It's a glorification. That's how I take it. That's my understanding of that statement. Maybe somebody else would want to comment. Yeah.
I heard in a previous class somewhere that in the Sanskrit language, superlatives are not exclusive as they are in English. So when we hear the greatest, we think.
That's it, absolutely.
Everybody else knows, and they said how. But it's just the language difference. It doesn't have that quality. That also.
It fits with what I. My limited understanding. Yeah. Okay, there's another question. Anand?
Uma and Shivaloka, she's a pure devotee.
Uma and Shivaloka is certainly a pure devotee.
So, why does Lord Shiva lower the stone, speak to Lord? In that place, you know, directly with them.
His question is, since the consort or the companion of Lord Shiva and Shiva Loka is a pure devotee, why does Lord Shiva pull Narada to the side and speak privately? We'll tell you later. The ladies are laughing along with the men. He says that she has this friendship with the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and she won't like to hear that above or more dear to the Lord than the goddess of fortune is somebody else. She will want to hear that kind of glorification because of her relationship, her friendship with the goddess of fortune. And she might become angry at those words. And if she becomes angry at those words, it won't be good for her. It's literally what's in the commentary. Yes.
Maharaj, Bali Maharaj and Banaswara, they are like Bali Maharaj, the son of Pradhan, and Banaswara, the son of Bali Maharaj.
Yeah.
And they're materially related to him, in the sense that they're just.
They're materially related to him.
But why does the Lord's mercy flow through all his clients?
It just does. He's kind upon. This is like if you become a pure devotee 21 generations before and after, receive great spiritual benefit. So although it's only material, which is the premise of your question, still the Lord honors that material relationship. That's His kindness. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita ki.
Yeah.